But let me tell you about what happened to me a few years ago. So a few years ago, I got the opportunity to go caving. Let's see if this works. Not quite. You might have to do the slides for me. There we go. So a few years ago, I got the opportunity to go caving, and it's exactly what it sounds like. You kind of get strapped up into all your gear, you get a wetsuit on, a helmet on, and you just go into a cave. And so we went in, we had to kind of like go down some waterfalls, wade through some streams, all in the darkness. And eventually our guide took us to a particular cave, and he told us to turn our head torches off. And the cave we were in was completely 100% pitch black darkness. Absolute darkness. It was something I've never, ever experienced before in my life. I would hold out my hand in front of my face like this, and I couldn't see a thing. It was really, really disconcerting. It was really a bit worrying. Your mind starts to run. What if my head torch is broken and won't turn back on? What if everyone else leaves and I'm just on my own in the cave? Like, how on earth am I meant to get out of here? Darkness can be quite frightening. And darkness is something we notice particularly in the month of December. If you're new to Scotland, then this is something you'll have to get used to. As soon as you hit November, December, the night gets really quite dark and the days get short. The darkest day of the year is going to be this month, on the 22nd of December, the shortest day of sunlight. But darkness isn't just external. It's not just a phenomenon in nature. Although it seems to have an impact on us, SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, it seems to affect about 2 million people in the UK. But putting the winter weather aside, Christmas time can be a time of real darkness for people too. Perhaps because, as you'll notice in our society, Christmas joy is something that's kind of thrown upon you. The marketing companies ramp up all their advertising. They encourage you to buy more gifts and do more and spend more. Why? Well, because it's Christmas. You have to get into the Christmas spirit. Just get happy. It's perhaps when we're forced to try and be joyful and happy. That's when we most strongly notice the parts of our lives where there isn't much joy to be found at all. And Christmas can be that time of year sometimes. Christmas can make us think of all the people that we've lost. We can be hit with that sadness because as we look around the dinner table at Christmas Day, there's some people missing. Maybe it's the relationships that were fragile or even broken completely. We can start to think about all our regrets, all the things that we wish we did or didn't do. We start to remember all the hurtful things that were done to us or that we had done to others. Christmas time can be a painful reminder of our loneliness instead of our connection to others. And the event, the festival of Christmas, it can't be the real solution. There's no amount of food or alcohol or gifts or Christmas music that will just turn you around to make you feel happy. You won't just cheer up just because of those things. So the darkness can be on the outside. It can be outside right now as it is. But true darkness, real darkness, can be in our own lives and hearts too. And true, real darkness it's not just going through a difficult time. Real darkness comes when we are incapable of seeing a way out, not even able to see any light or hope at all. Think back to the cave when I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. Sometimes we can see that there's no way out. We can feel like there's no way out. We feel completely hopeless. So I want to give you guys an opportunity to think about that idea of darkness a little bit. Why do you think we experience darkness in our lives? Maybe spend a few minutes on your table just thinking about that. Where do you see the darkness coming? And why do you think we experience it? Spend a few minutes and then we'll come back together. Just to continue chatting. But just continuing on that idea of darkness, this idea of living in darkness and experiencing this darkness, this is not a new one. It's been experienced by people before, and it will be in the future too. But I want us to go back in time a little bit. I want to take you back in time to a people who were in deep, deep darkness. Now, the Bible tells us about these people. It was 2,700 years ago to the people of Israel. And these are a people in crisis. The nation was divided in two. There was a northern half and a southern half. So there's a split in the nation. And on the borders of this nation, there were huge, enormous empires threatening to destroy them. A few years ago, we would have thought that would never happen. I would never know what that would feel like. But just across on the edge of Europe to us, we see that this can happen to any country, as Russia invaded Ukraine. But it wasn't just on the borders, it wasn't just politics for the people of Israel that were causing them stress and worry. It was within the borders too. The nation was falling apart. There was economic corruption, where the rich were oppressing the poor. There was legal injustice. And instead of the rich helping the poor, the rich people would get drunk and indulge whilst the poor went hungry. The nation was breaking apart and it's facing destruction, and the collapse is moral, economic, and it's also spiritual. Because the guy telling us about these people was one of them, a man called Isaiah. And he made it very clear the reason as to why these people descended into darkness. He tells of how the people of Israel turned their backs on God. And he makes it clear that this was a disastrous decision. He explains what will happen to the people of Israel because they have done this. This is what it says. Distressed and hungry, they will roam through the land. And when they are famished, they will become enraged. And looking upward, they will curse their king and their God. Then they will look toward the earth and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom. And they will be thrust into utter darkness. This is where the people of Israel find themselves. Aimless, hungry, angry, and cursing God. But this is where the real darkness comes for them, because they start to look elsewhere for light. They look towards the earth, but what do they find? Only distress, darkness, and fearful gloom. That's quite a provocative and frightening statement, isn't it? These people are facing external challenges, facing potential invasion and exile. But Isaiah is suggesting, well, he's telling them that the reason they find themselves in this darkness is their attitude towards God. And the interesting thing is that others are noticing that this might be similar to our current society today. A few decades ago, there was a movement called the New Atheists. And it was involved quite a few famous names. Some of them you might know. Richard Dawkins was one of them. Hitchens as well. And what they argued for, essentially, was that for society to move forwards, to advance, to improve, we would all need to abandon any silly beliefs in the divine, any beliefs in God or gods. And because they were speaking into mainly American and United Kingdom contexts, Christianity was the target, the God of the Bible. And yet it's become obvious that New Atheism, this movement, has become a complete failure. Not only has it failed in its objectives to disprove the existence of God, but it also became clear that to try and build a fruitful society on this idea that there's no such thing as God or nothing that is behind the whole world that we see, it's impossible to do that. What's more terrifying, though, is that New Atheism offers no solution to the darkness and despair that people feel, when people lose purpose, when they're looking for hope and purpose. New Atheism offers you nothing. The only comfort they could offer you would come in the words of Brian Cox: life is just chemistry. Or maybe make it a bit more personal: you are just chemistry. That's all you are. The same movement tried to provide a little bit of hope for people, and they put out an advert on London buses, and they said, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." Again, it hasn't seemed to work, has it? More and more people are coming to realize that there is something more. Like ancient Israel, when we look toward the earth, we can also come up with the same conclusion, that all we find is distress and darkness and fearful gloom. It was strange. When I was in that cave and I couldn't see anything, couldn't see my hand, I didn't want to close my eyes. Even though I'd been told that there was no light whatsoever to be found, nothing to be seen in this cave, it didn't stop me looking. And I think that's the same situation that every one of us finds us in our own hearts. Even when we're in the darkness, darkest parts of life, we are still looking and looking and looking for something. It's why, even if we're not religious, our culture makes a big deal about Christmas. We follow the traditions and the lights and the exciting food and the joy because we're looking for something more. We're looking for hope. And maybe you can place your hope in the future, that some new invention or innovation will solve the darkness of our world and of our own hearts. Maybe we can look to our own selves. Can there be some light within us, maybe, that can chase the darkness away? Something that's becoming a bit of a tradition in our household with my wife and I is that we're watching the whole Harry Potter series up until Christmas Day. And the books are full of interesting quotes, but there's an interesting one that came in the film. One of the characters, Sirius Black, he says this, "We've all got both light and dark inside us. What matters is the part we choose to act on. That's who we really are." We have an instinct that behind the darkness that we see in life, behind the appearance of light and joy at Christmas, that there has to be something real behind it that we're looking for. But let me leave you with that quote and let you have a chat. Where do you think light can be found? What do you think the answer is to the darkness that we experience in our lives? Have a few minutes just to chat on your tables, and then we'll come back together again. In our discussions, we're going to hear from the band another song. And again, as we round off our evening together. But I wonder how patient you are when you were younger, maybe. When you were a young kid, waiting at Christmas time feels impossible. You might have to do the slides for me. There we go. Lovely jubbly. See, the build-up at school, the different Christmas parties, nativities, and Christmas shopping, the build-up for Christmas is huge. You can't wait. But waiting can be even more difficult when you're waiting for darkness to leave, when you're waiting for that time of darkness to end. And the people of Israel, 2,700 years ago, they went into a time of darkness. They lost everything. Maybe you felt that way too. And where are they meant to look for hope in that time? How are they meant to wait? Do they look inside themselves? Do they look to one another? The answer isn't to look inside ourselves, though. That quote from Harry Potter, it can feel appealing, can't it? If we look inside ourselves, there must be some light which we can choose, and that will lead us to hope, that will lead us the way out. But I think what is obvious in our world is that humanity often consistently chooses the darkness, don't we? We cannot rely on our ability to choose what is right, what is light. Instead, what we need is a light that is external, a light that can shine from the outside into where we are, into our darkness. And that is the great hope that Isaiah tells Israel. And ultimately, what he is saying is this whole good news of Christmas. The whole point of Christmas is what Isaiah starts to tell them. Because after he announces that the people of Israel will enter darkness, he tells them that a light will dawn. He says, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned." When all seemed hopeless, when all seemed dark, a light was going to shine. I wonder if you've ever been camping or hiking in the hills at nighttime. It's a pretty exposing experience. I remember once when I was at school, we were told at 9 o'clock at night in midwinter that we were to be out of our tents and to do a 30K hike and find our way back. So we had to try and navigate, but we weren't allowed to use torches either, which was a challenge. Thankfully, the moon was out a little bit, so you could make out a few lines on your map. But needless to say, it was a mixture of success. But the relief was so real when you rounded a corner or came over the crest of a hill and you glimpsed a light coming from the tent of the checkpoint you were meant to reach. It was unmissable because amid the black, dark hills, the light shone. It stood out. And this is the great hope of the people that Isaiah is writing to. But here's the thing, that hope that Isaiah was writing to those people all those years ago, that is the same hope for us today. What then is the light? What is the hope? Well, Isaiah tells us, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever." Here's what we're going to do next. Instead of me continuing to chat, just have a look at that. Have a look at that little section of Isaiah. And talk about these things. What kind of hope is he describing? What is the light going to do? Have a few minutes and then we'll come back together. Draw us in there. And I wonder if you're starting to see the connection between what we're thinking about and Christmas now. I'm going to put a picture up on the screen in just a moment. If you've seen this before, don't yell out what the answer is too quickly. But try and spot what is wrong with this scene. What is out of place? It took me a long time. I'll admit that. Do you see baby? See Yoda? It's not baby Yoda. Yeah. The Star Wars character just behind the donkey there. I think it was a well-meaning child pranking their mother, I believe. But this scene is so common. This is the Christmas nativity scene. It's a picture of what the Bible records of all these people gathering around a child that was born. People gathering around a little baby. And my son is 4 months old now, but I can get it. They're fun to look at. They're fun to gather around. They provide a lot of joy. New life is beautiful. But what Isaiah is describing about the child being born, this child is no ordinary baby. This child is the great hope of the entire world. Everything will be transformed by this child. He'll be a king over a kingdom that will never end. He'll bring peace. He'll bring care. He'll bring comfort. He is the light that shines in the darkness. And this is where we start to make sense of what Christmas is. It is about the story of how God, out of love, sent a light into the darkness. How God sent a light to shine on a people completely stuck in darkness. And this hope, this light, is external. It doesn't come from humanity. It comes from the outside. It comes from God. The child that Isaiah is talking about is Jesus. And this may seem a little far-fetched, but the people who are eyewitnesses to Jesus' life were in no doubt. This is what John says, one of the eyewitnesses of Jesus' life. He says, "In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." We know that darkness is in the world. Death, sadness, and despair, they're all too often close to home. And what's worse is we can see that this darkness is at work in ourselves, and we are helpless to deal with it. But in him, in Jesus, was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. Jesus is the light who has come for all humanity. And you should ask the question then, okay, how? How is Jesus the light in the darkness? Well, the answer comes in two parts: who Jesus is and what Jesus did. Jesus himself claims that he is the light. He said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." So what is it about Jesus that means he can offer this, that he can make this claim? Well, Jesus made a whole load of claims in John's gospel, and I don't have time to give you all of them, but let me encourage you to take a gospel of John away. This is an eyewitness account of Jesus' life. Take it away and see for yourself everything that Jesus did and said. But let me highlight a few and see, and you can see for yourself in the book of John. Firstly, Jesus claims to be God, that he is actually God, the one that created the world, that he has complete power over the world, and the one who has control of the world. Secondly, although Jesus says he is God, he became human to be with us. Jesus, as God, did not stand on the sidelines, but stepped in to take on humanity, to become human, to be the light in the darkness that we need. And thirdly, he offers the way to be restored to relationship with God because of who he is. The darkness that we face is because of our attitude towards him. We are like those people in Isaiah who have turned their backs on God and find ourselves in darkness. That is why we see so much darkness in our lives and in the world. But Jesus says and offers a way to fix that, to be restored to God. So that's who he is. That's the claims he made. But what about that second question? What did Jesus do? If we want to escape darkness and live in the light, then we have to believe in Jesus and what he did. Because Jesus did something extraordinary, something nobody else could do. Jesus in himself took on the whole darkness of the world, and he died the death that all of us deserved. Because John records that this baby boy that was born eventually ended up being crucified on a Roman cross, executed. Not because he was guilty of any crime, but because he willingly gave himself in our place. God became flesh to take on your darkness, my darkness, and the darkness of the world, to die and endure the wrath of God so that we could be forgiven and restored to him. It wasn't a performance. It wasn't symbolic. Because as John tells us, the light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not overcome it. Jesus defeated death and darkness. And this is where Christmas is pointing to. The birth of this baby is not the main event. The destiny of this child was to die on a cross. And he was placed in a tomb. He was buried. But when his followers came to the tomb, they found it open. The stone had been rolled away. This is what his followers record when they came to the tomb. Simon Peter came along behind him, one of the other followers of Jesus, and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. John goes on to explain how Jesus then appeared to his followers, showed that he was alive, he was real. It wasn't anything, it wasn't make-believe, it was true. Remember that experience that I mentioned in the cave? Seeing nothing, complete darkness. I wonder if you sensed a bit of that discomfort and desperation of being in absolute darkness with no light to be found anywhere. We will face, or we might be facing even in this very moment, a darkness that is all the more terrifying because we can't see a way out. But this is the hope that you can find in Jesus. You have an opportunity to know the light. And you have a decision to make. So let me leave you with these last few words from Jesus. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." That's what Jesus is offering. To know him is to have light. Have a chat on your tables, and then we'll hear from the band shortly. So one final song before we finish off for the evening. And this song is a really good one. This is talking about where the real joy of Christmas is to be found. So let's listen in, and then we'll close off the evening.
Longs for a little bit of hope. Oh, come, Oh, come Emmanuel.
For your search, if this is something you want to know more about. If you want to find out more, we've got a whole load of things happening this Christmas season at this church. And if you want to find out more, come and chat to me. Chat to those folks who welcomed you at the door, who are offering you lovely drinks as well. I'm sure they can point you in the right direction. But also, given that it is the season of Christmas, we have gifts to give you. And these are completely free. And I'd love for you to take all three of these home with you. So the first one is the searching for Christmas, thinking about actually the very parts of the Bible we're thinking about tonight. So please take that away with you. And given that if you've missed the whole year of all the making sense of life questions we've been thinking about, then you can take away this book, which asks the big questions in life and gives you some really helpful places to start. So take that with you as well. And then most importantly, if you want to find out who Jesus is, then find out from the Bible itself. Take away this Gospel of John, which will take you through the whole life of Jesus and explain why he is the light of the world to you as well. So, three wonderful gifts that you can take away for Christmas. Please feel free to enjoy the rest of the nibbles and drinks, and yeah, feel free to chat further if you have more questions.